Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for this essential session on building and maintaining investor relationships. This is part of our ongoing Dialogue with African Biotech Leaders series around funding and investments. I am Adrienne Lusa, your host and moderator for today. And I'm thrilled to be joined by our expert speakers. Dr. Vuyisile Pehanewu needs no more introduction, I guess, because he's been with us since the beginning of the series when we had a live plenary in Durban at the BioAfrica Convention last September. And also Gianmarco Melfi from OneBio. So I must say Dr. Pehane is the executive director for the bioeconomy sector at TIA, the Technology Innovation Agency here in South Africa. And Gianmarco Melfi, who is a partner at OneBio Venture Studios, which is a dedicated venture VC firm for the biotech sector. And I'm also very, very thrilled to welcome two guest speakers who are joining us for the very first time. They are from Cohesion Bureau, Natasha Drapo, I hope I said your name properly, and Frank Schwartz, who bring a wealth of knowledge in investor relations and strategic communications. So today we aim to delve into the best practices for engaging with investors and maintaining those relationships effectively. We want to encourage active participation. So please feel free from now to share your questions and insights throughout our discussion in the chat. And let's make this a memorable and very insightful experience. So before I hand over the virtual mic to our expert panel, I want to invite you all to please, whether you're on your phone or on your laptops, go to www. Now we are going to be trying to engage through polls, live polls. So if you can go on to www. And you will find, as participant, you will need a code to get in. And the code is, I'll repeat that again. I will put the link as well in the chat in the course of our discussion. So just bear with me. And just a heads up that we have 36 attendees right now online. So I'll hand over to maybe Frank, a bit about yourself and why you were keen to join this call today.
All right, thank you very much, Adrienne. Thank you for having me in this round. I see I'm the silverback, so I'm bringing quite some experience. Unfortunately, not that much in the biotech industry in Africa, I have to admit. It's rather new. I'm quite familiar with other industries in Africa because I'm more the generalist in this panel. I have a background for more than 20 years in corporate communications with a very strong focus on financial communications and investor relations. So I have also a very strong focus on life science companies. Started actually in the public equity sector more than 20 years ago. One of my biggest deals, probably a well-known company also in Africa, was Genmab, the biggest biotech IPO in Europe and at the moment the biggest company there. Unfortunately, as you know, capital raising is very difficult everywhere, also in Europe and in Germany. So I went down the ladder a little bit and for the past 6-7 years did a lot of work with earlier companies in alternative financing, and really my focus is on story building for the companies and identifying the right investors for the specific story.
Thanks, Frank. That's, and I'll also ask Natasha to give us a bit of background about herself and why she's on this call.
Thank you, Adrienne. And it's such a pleasure to be here today. Similar to Frank, I am quite a generalist. I've worked with different industries, but primarily in the past, I would say 7-8 years, I made almost a complete transition to biotech. And and medtech. And the reason for that was impact. Yeah, I'm very cautious of if you don't have good health, then really nothing else matters. And that was really my primary driver, you know, going from full-time corporate finance in London to, you know, working primarily with fairly early stage companies in healthcare in life science industry. So in my experience, I've worked with companies from different stages of development. You know, some of them were commercial, some of them were public, but majority of them are fairly early in their pre-revenue, pre-regulatory approval stage. And, you know, in my experience, you know, being both an executive and in-house investor relations advisor and a board member, I'm trying to bring taking the company from early stage to the potential exit or an IPO and helping the company adjust its equity story, that investment thesis, to different stakeholder groups. And I cannot really emphasize it enough. And I think we will talk a little more about this, you know, on this call today, is the importance of tailoring your narrative. So I'm applaud all of you today about, you know, on your mission to move the biotech innovation further. I'm really happy to be part of this exciting discussion and look forward to insights from my peer. But really, you know, this morning I was looking through my emails, and there was an email that came from McKinsey that talks about growth that goes hand in hand with innovation. You know, we are focusing on innovation here. It's such an important area, and I'm hopeful that, you know, from this exciting discussion today, you will learn, you know, something new that would help you connect with investment audience, potential strategic partners, but also, you know, just being able to communicate your value proposition in a way that will help you attract investment whenever you need it. So this is what I've been doing pretty much all the time, Adrienne, and it's an absolutely great pleasure to be working with innovators. I'm not a scientist, I'm a business person. So it's a great honor for me to be able to work with people that are actually right there frontline trying to create solutions that will help so many people on the world.
Thank you so much, Natasha. And I'm glad that you mentioned the reason why you transitioned into biotech. And I believe that most of us on this call can relate to the value that we place on impact, and that it's ultimately the impact that we have on society through biotechnology that really is at the forefront of everything that we do. And that is why we're having this discussion today, is to facilitate the communication, the engagement, so that we fast track that impact and eventually benefit our world, benefit Africa in particular. So I'm going to start by just putting ahead the questions, some of the questions that we got from our audience, and then we will get going with the discussion. And please, if you didn't submit your questions beforehand, you still can put your questions in the chat. I'll take those questions, and our expert panel will be able to attend to them. If we don't cover them today, I can still get those answers to you post this call. So what are the key elements in your opinion, and I'm going to go with you again, Natasha, what do you think are the key elements that investors look for in a biotech startup when they consider funding?
Well, you know, there's several elements that I think are really critically important, and in particular, the companies that are early stage, it's the potential, it's the why, it's, you know, the how, what, the how, and the why, what it is that you do, how you do it, and why you do it, and probably even, you know, above all of that is the quality of your team. So I would say, you know, when you build that storyline, when you prepare for the engagement with the potential investment community, investors would want to understand what brought you to where you are today. There's very often that emotional connection, in particular in the private capital sector. And I'm a partner at the fairly large single family office. We have a lot of experience working with very early stage founders. But as well with the specialist investors, and I'm sure Gianmarco will be talking about this as well, it's, you know, knowing why you're doing what you're doing and being able to communicate your value proposition in a way that creates a sense of urgency, as in what will happen if you don't solve this problem. And really, this is something I find that applies pretty much universally across biotech, you know, medtech, but also other technologies, is what will happen if you don't solve this problem. So in and I would say, you know, going from the well-stated need to well-communicated solution, showing the potential of your solution, and that could be, you know, your market, it could be other opportunities, it could be some strategic elements to it, and highlight how you're going to bring that product to market, and really make sure that you emphasize the collective experience that you have on your team. So I would say for me, those would be those 5-6 elements that investors would want to understand in the very first instance before, you know, they go in.
Thank you so much. And Marco, as an investor, how do you maintain long-term relationships with the investees of OneBio? This is a question that came through from the biotech entrepreneurs, and they also want to know, like, it's a two-way street. It's not just them reaching out, but when they do reach out and they do maybe get funded, how do you go about to make sure that there's a strong relationship between yourselves and your investees?
Thanks, Adrian. Good question. So I think post-investment from OneBio, all of our portfolio companies, we are a very hands-on firm. We tend to, in the DD process, really, as Natasha mentioned earlier, you know, team is absolutely critical. We get to know the founders as best we can in a fairly short time frame, and then look to continue that relationship. So I think I sound a bit like a broken record. I mentioned it last time, but it's trust and transparency. We kind of want to be there for our companies post investment, that can jump on and brainstorm when problems come up. This is early stage biotech from our side of things. This is pre-seed and seed. Things are going to change. Challenges will come out of left field that are unexpected. And we tend to jump in with our companies whenever those arise. We actually structure our engagements a little bit just to make sure we can get to everyone as needed. And we do ad hoc meetings, but at least fortnightly, we'll have a catch up with each of the portfolio. We tend to alternate between formal updates where the guys will really kind of pitch where they are, what's been happening, what's the new data, if they're raising, what progress they've been making. And then a more informal, guys, what are the challenges? What are the things that you're really struggling with? And then try and address those as we go. So I think that over time, that steady engagement, reaching into our network when we can, we've had success with so far. As I say, we keep in comms with all of our portfolio and look to continue in the same fashion moving forward.
That is insightful. And I hope that even those who are potentially looking to build relationships with biotech entrepreneurs in Africa can take note of that. But I'm just curious, do you think that is a special consideration that investors or potential investors in entrepreneurs in the biotech sector in Africa should be aware of, that is probably different from other hubs, other regions, because of the unique circumstances in which entrepreneurs in Africa operate? Do you think there's anything that any pointers, any insights, as being one of the only VC firms that focuses on biotech in Africa?
I think probably an important one on that vein is kind of getting to know what VCs themselves are looking for. As you've mentioned, I think we're kind of the only active VC in the biotech space on the continent so far. So there's not a wealth of information out there locally, to put it that way, that can kind of digest what we think a VC play is. Now, every fund is different. We'll look at opportunities slightly differently. But from a kind of empirical knowledge point of view, what I'd encourage prospective founders and entrepreneurs to do is to kind of try and get into the minds of a VC. There's a fantastic book I can recommend. It's getting a little bit older now, but Secrets of Sand Hill Road by Scott Cooper. He's a partner at A16Z and Dries & Horowitz. It's a lovely kind of understand what VCs are trying to look at, or some VCs are trying to look at when they're looking at a deal. And by understanding that mindset, it can really help your narrative, as Natasha mentioned earlier, trying to tailor it to a VC play. And also we'll ask some hard questions of your venture. You know, is this a VC backable play? We get a number of companies coming to us in South Africa that are presenting interesting business cases, but that sometimes aren't really VC backable. I think, you know, production of reagents in South Africa, looking at a very small market, not looking at, you know, export. Small market is a thing we look at regularly. Is it a VC backable play? Some VCs may think so, but, you know, getting to, as best you can, get to know what a VC is looking for, the horizons, the return on investment that they're looking for, the stage of their fund, can really help kind of answer some of those preemptively before you get into those conversations or during.
And I'll take the question again. Yes, Natasha, yes?
I just want to complement what Gianmarco was saying, because I think this is, it's really so important, building that relationship. And it's, you know, looking sort of the twofold, you know, maintaining the relationship. It's exactly the same goes towards your prospective investors, perhaps in the private capital field. Like, say, you know, if you have a number of family offices or private investors that you think, you know, could be good for you at some point, be proactive. Be respectful in your outreach, but be proactive. If you have something to share, drop a quick note, you know, offer to come in for 30 minutes, you know, have a coffee and provide an update. Building relationship takes time. But it's this relationship that ultimately will allow both parties to get to know each other, to understand the investment preferences, and to also build that trust in. I would say, you know, don't wait until you have that perfect moment when you have something big to share. You know, talk to anyone who would listen. You know, build that relationship, reach out. And also, you know, not all of those conversations will go to, you know, where you would like them to go. But you will always learn something. You know, you will learn how to present better. You will learn how to adjust message to your, you know, to your audience. So I would say, you know, the more communication, the better. And that book that Gianmarco mentioned, it really is quite brilliant. And that will also allow you to lift yourself up from your case. And I know this is really, it can be quite difficult, because what you're working on is really exciting. And we tend to get absorbed in our company's story. But knowing your peers, knowing the broader network, some of the success stories and some of the things that perhaps didn't work out is just as valuable. So being able to, you know, to look at the landscape, it will also help you build better communication channel with the VCs and understand whether or not you actually have a chance. So I would say that outreach and, you know, look at things beyond your companies.
So if I may add, I think it's very important to point out that Natasha mentioned, if something big happens, don't wait. It's not only the positive things, you know, especially in the period when you're a private company. I think it counts for all companies. Continuity is key for building up a relationship. So a lot of companies tend to withdraw with their communication in difficult phases. And that's just wrong. That was the biggest mistake, because everybody will notice anyway, sooner or later. So there's not any waiting for the best moment to tell. It's just, especially if you have an investor that is very close to you, like a business angel or a VC fund, if you have problems, talk to them. The earlier, the better. It helps you. It gives you yourself some relief, because otherwise you can't sleep. Because how I'm going to tell them? Yeah, and they are the ones that are probably suited the best to help you in your difficult phase. So I think for public companies, it's even more difficult to go out with some bad news, because you will immediately see a decrease in the share price and you feel like your stand on the wall and everybody's watching at you. But in the, especially for the earlier companies or early stage companies, it's not that everybody will notice, but those guys that are most important for you, the guys that bring the money, you should be honest with them. You should be clear in your communication. Speed is an issue. Don't delay the information. And really continuity. That's absolutely the key. And I can see, I'm also a business angel by myself on a smaller scale, but I can really already feel when something is not going well because communication slows down. That's the typical pattern. So people that are involved will realize anyway, and it gives you trust and credibility to your investors if you go straight ahead to them and tell them what's going on. I think it's a very important advice.
And that is
Dr. Pehane, you have something to say?
Adrian, you know, as a government funder ourselves, as a technology innovation agency, what we've found is that it has gone a long way for us to include as part of the contract that investees, as often as possible, communicate that investment which they've received from government. Why this is important is because more and more we're seeing around the world that private sector investment goes where there has been some de-risking done, especially in cases where government has come in. So in the more sort of complex technologies, vaccine manufacturing, for argument's sake, biomanufacturing, we are finding that the ability to raise follow-on funding, particularly for setting up these very expensive production facilities, is often from other countries around the world. Let's call them first world countries. But of course, the question they always ask is, what has been government's skin in the game as far as that is concerned? And typically, you know, you'd want the investees to be able to say, without fear of contradiction, that where they are and the steps they have made has actually been as a result of government funding. What that does immediately, it translates that particular government into an attractive funding destination for private sector funding from other countries around the world. So it's very important, you know, that people talk about investment from government, whether it's a grant or some other instrument. But the point is that the story to be told is that with the participation of government funding, they're able to, in essence, render that country as an attractive destination for foreign investment. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I wanted actually to ask Dr. Pehane as well. You being, the government in the government arm of enabling funding for biotech entrepreneurship, you probably come in quite early. And you're probably very, very much aware of the realities, the intricacies that the entrepreneurs go through. And I think I would want to find out, what can you say to people who are looking to come in after you to be aware of that they probably are not seeing in other places, but it's kind of unique to our own ecosystem and our own realities. Just something to keep in mind, in as much as they're coming and hoping that you've de-risked, what sort of awareness should it still have that should maybe help with biases, if I may say, or facilitate the process of even engaging with entrepreneurs, and also making it easier for entrepreneurs to build relationships with them because they relate or they have some empathy for what the biotech entrepreneurs in Africa actually go through.
So where that's concerned, I mean, as I said, you know, we de-risk the innovations towards commercialization. But of course, you know, there's always a requirement for entrepreneurs to understand who's next as far as the value chain is concerned, what partners mm-hmm. need to be in place. And we typically say to entrepreneurs, you know, have a line of sight regarding who will be the potential partners as far as innovation is concerned, and engage these individuals early on. So, you know, we encourage investees to understand who's going to be part of my venture later on, have these discussions early on, and then turn to government like ourselves for the other, let's call them non-financial sources of support, which is in essence opening those doors creating the networks, doing the introductions and so forth, and participating in a number of these, let's call them mixes or opportunities to communicate and talk about what you do. We've typically found that investees need, in essence, that support to say, what is the next thing after you've demonstrated the technical merits of your opportunity? The next thing is often the commercial merits to be demonstrated. And so what investees also need to understand is that, you know, the cost of commercialization can be several times more expensive than the cost for the technical development. And so we tend to underestimate what it's going to take to commercialize these inventions, intellectual property. And so these kinds of stories need to be told, of course, with examples, so that our investors are aware of what is the larger cost to be borne by themselves as they try and commercialize their inventions. Of course, you know, understanding the market, we always say to people, understand your market. To play in the game, understand the market. And of course, understanding the market means having a very good appreciation of what the regulatory space looks like. Typically, we find people think that they have, let's call it a wonder drug, whatever it might be, and tend to forget what it takes to enter into certain territories and the costs of regulatory success. Very, very important. Mm-hmm. And all of these, of course, you know, add to the cost of commercialization. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for bringing that insightful contribution. Especially highlighting the regulatory aspects and awareness that needs to go in there. I want to ask from Frank and Natasha, how important is, so shifting now to, again, the entrepreneurs and how they reach out and how they build relationships with investors, how important is company branding in attracting and maintaining those investor relationships from your work at Cohesion Bureau? What have you seen so far?
Who wants to go first?
Frank, you can.
I can start. I think it's a two-edged sword, yeah, to say so. For companies, especially in the investor sector, of course, branding can always help a lot. Yeah, to be recognizable, that's a huge advantage. However, especially investors and even the very educated ones, like the venture capitalists, I have to say, they tend to put companies in somewhere in the shelf. Yeah. And if you have found your place in the shelf, you will stay there for a long time. So, and if the topic that is connected with your brand is not in fashion anymore, that could really harm your activities in raising funds. Yeah? So you can see this in all sectors. So early venture capital, seed companies, or in the public sector. To give you an example, it's not a brand that was initiated by themselves. I would say, like, if you look at BioNTech, the company that created the Corona vaccine, yeah, but a lot of companies also jumped on the topic of Corona. BioNTech is not a vaccine company, or at least not a Corona vaccine company. It's actually a cancer company, and it's an mDNA company. But it was so strongly connected with Corona, and now that Corona is gone, the share price goes down. People are looking at potential revenues that they could achieve with that kind of business, but they're not looking anymore on the potential that is in the oncology space, which is probably much bigger than the other one. So I see branding in a classical way as a kind of a risky thing.
Okay. Natasha, any thoughts?
I would compliment what Frank is saying. I hear that question quite often, in particular, you know, with regards to the early stage companies, and some of them go to great length to, you know, they invest very heavily into their mission statements and amazing websites that are very, very expensive and so on. Where you are today, and, you know, and focus on what will create value today. It's not to say that you shouldn't have a long-term vision. You should. But especially when you're in a pre-seed stage, so many things can change. And Frank made a couple of excellent observations. It is important to be able to communicate what it is that you do and why you do it. But it does not have to. That's really important from the investment perspective, because I've seen that have made tremendous branding effort. I mean, really, looking at Apple for and Tesla for inspiration. And it's great to have that bigger vision, but it came at a cost. We're not focused enough. So I would say if you have that asset that you believe will solve an unmet need, focus on delivering value with this asset. Mm-hmm. Because in your product development, you achieve certain milestones, it's likely that your valuation is going to go up. That means that you're able to bring more investors at a higher valuation. You're going to get more capital. Those still unlock opportunities for you to look at some of the other opportunities and the branding exercise as a whole. So I would say, don't get too caught up on this. That would be my personal advice. But I see Gianmarco is nodding. So I think he's, I welcome his views. But that's sort of my message would be, don't spend too much time.
Put it in a nutshell, rather build up a reputation of a company that does something meaningful and that delivers than build up a brand. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
100%. Just to add there, Natasha, you're right. You spotted me nodding. I was agreeing with all of the comments you and Frank just mentioned, especially at the pre-seed and seed stage. Branding and marketing, I completely agree. I'd rather see a company spending that valuable capital on trying to reach an inflection point and build value internally. The other thing to add on, if you are an entrepreneur thinking strongly about your branding and marketing at the early stage, a lot of early stage biotechs are building building technology, they're building value, they're building trade secrets, and they may often need to kind of operate or choose to operate in stealth for a time, sometimes quite a significant time, where of course branding and marketing and a flashy website doesn't necessarily help you on that front. So I think it is important at a particular stage. Having said that, where an element where branding, and this doesn't necessarily have to be expensive, can be helpful, I think, is kind of getting to your seed stage when you're starting to build quite a comprehensive data room. It can be quite impressive if you have a bit of a brand identity associated with that big body of documentation, which is your data room. But I don't think it necessarily needs to cost an arm and a leg at a seed stage. Much rather spend the majority of your capital building more significant value. Just wanted to add that.
I'm really inspired by what you all are saying, and I do see the value in that. It totally makes sense, especially when you're limited in funds and you're trying to make the most out of what you do have. However, I'm still aware that there should be some, when you're trying to communicate your value proposition for the sake of our conversation to investors, and I'm thinking here your pitch to investors. What are some of the things in that thinking of how you market yourself, how you portray yourself in your pitch deck, that should our audience, our entrepreneurs should definitely keep in mind? What are the components and what is the optimal flow? And I'll direct this question to Natasha, that will be ideal to really get you in front of the right people.
Thanks, Adrian. And pitch deck really is, that's going to be your most valuable asset for quite some time. And I would, first and foremost, before I talk about the components and the flow, I would say, remember that it is a living and breathing document. And, I often see entrepreneurs that are saying, well, we don't need to work on this now because we had a consultant that worked on this last year. And said, but that was last year. That has changed. Some of the most successful companies that I've seen, they literally never close that PowerPoint down. It is always open somewhere on the background because every time they have a meeting, they go back and say, the question that I've received, I'm a reflecting them correctly. So, you know, this is really the document that you should be spending a lot of time on. You know, going back to the beginning of this discussion, we talked about the things that sort of investors are looking for. It's this well-articulated problem, well-stated solution, your value proposition, why is that you that is going to solve this problem? Why should I believe that it is your company that is going to make that big leap? And showing the roadmap, showing the potential, any tractions that you had today, really important to reflect. And it could be your first use cases, it could be your first preclinical data, any deliverables that you can show, you must reflect them there. And then you talk about your team, and then always round up with a nice summary. So start with introducing your company, really a snapshot of who you are, what you do, why you do it, what you have accomplished so far, who is helping you on this journey, and going into the problem statement, going into the solution and value proposition, showcasing the potential of this solution. That could be your local market, could be your global market. And depending on the indication that you have, depending on the solutions that you're working on, you may want to even showcase some of the successes that have been there amongst your peers. You know, some of the companies that I know are putting M&A slide, for instance. You know, this is not to say that you're immediately going into the exit discussions and, you know, and you know, talking about how you're going to sell the company. But it is to show that actually there is attraction on a bigger market. There are companies that have demonstrated success in either the same business model or in a similar indication. And, you know, and showcase what you've already done. And that could be your IP. I mean, it really is your biggest value. Now, having said that, it will always be a very valid set. But depending on your stage, you may want to state that up front. This is what we have. This is how we protect it. It could be your affiliation with an academic institution. It could be your affiliation with a potential strategic partner. And then, you know, any preclinical data, you know, any translational data that demonstrates and confirms that value proposition we talked about early in the deck is going to help you tremendously. And on this is, I would say, is the biggest differentiator in my view between the specialist investor and, say, a private investor that perhaps is not a biotech specialist. You know, when you're talking to potential VC, you put as much as you can into it. You know, your mechanism of action, your preclinical, clinical value, you know, as many scientific slides as you can. When it comes to the private investor, you may want to tone it down a little bit because, you know, you don't want to lose the attention of the person. But then focus on the business side of it. And I'm happy to provide, you know, somebody on. But, you know, make sure that this side, this differentiator is really, really prominent in your pitch deck. And then talk about your team. And lastly, have that quick summary, which is similar to how you started the deck. But, you know, whether you want to call it investment highlights, whether you want to call it the summary, but just to summarize, this is who we are. And you highlight your biggest value points right at the end of your deck. In my experience, this flow tends to do quite well. And, you know, that doesn't have to be extensive. I would say, you know, for early stage company, 20, 21 slides is sufficient. And you don't want to, you know, for this to go on for too long. And the reason as well why I would advise to keep that quite compact is, especially for your initial introductions, you know, initial meetings, the goal of your first meeting is to get a second meeting. So as you progress in your development and relationship with whether it's a VC or a private investor, you can bring in more information, but, you know, try to keep that story quite compact when you first approach someone.
Thank you so much.
Has mentioned already, but I really want to point out that it's really important as for you as a company, you should do your homework before you meet an investor and find out what is his background, what does he know, what does he understand? Yeah, so there is really such a variety of investors. A business angel might have a personal relationship to a certain disease because someone in his family is affected and he wants to do something for it. So he doesn't have the scientific background, as Natasha had said. So you really have to come from a different angle. It's still the same story, but you can tell one story in different ways. Yeah. Or if you're looking at a government investor, he would also be interested to see, is there a potential that you will create jobs in my area? Yeah. What's the impact on the society beyond progress in medical care and so on? So mm-hmm. that's really something that you should do before you talk to someone. Do some research. What is his background? What does he know? What mm-hmm. where is he already invested in? And so on and so forth.
Yeah. Thanks, Frank, for bringing in that aspect of tailoring your pitch as well to the specific target audience or investor of investors. That is, I think, very, very important. And I think Natasha covered quite comprehensively. I don't know if Dr. Behane or Marco have any other thoughts on the pitch deck front, seeing it's very important.
I think maybe just one brief something to add. Agree again with a lot of these points. It's a living doc. I think Natasha's mentioning that is really important. It can't stagnate. In terms of early stage pitch decks, what we actually see companies do quite a bit, and we are a fan of, is essentially having a pitch deck, which is a deck that you speak to, and then an info deck or a more word heavy, content heavy deck that can get shared standalone before a meeting, or potentially post. But really keeping it concise and punchy. I mean, 10 slides for an early stage company looking at raising a pre-seed round isn't too short. If you can communicate the story effectively, one additional element to kind of consider adding is having backup slides ready for questions that you're receiving quite a lot as you speak to investors. Kind of answer said question in a slide. It doesn't necessarily mean it comes up for your initial pitch, but should that investor ask the question, it's just a case of pulling it out. You know, you've been there, but keeping the actual pitch itself quite condensed. So I just wanted to add those two for completeness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If I may just say, I mean, it's very important that, you know, entrepreneurs are open to being trained on how to put together a pitch deck and even how to pitch. So a lot of us, you know, might be eloquent just in terms of expressing ourselves in the work that we do. However, when it comes to sitting in front of investors, venture capital and so forth, people who see these kinds of things, so many of them day in, day out, it's very, very important that entrepreneurs go for the training, learn how to do it properly in a professional manner for them to actually be heard and pique the interest of investors. Very, very important to be open to that. Thanks.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually an important point, and so of course the ads part, yeah, for consultants like us, it's actually really helpful to have a third party looking on the deck before you present it to someone else, because as an entrepreneur you very often have this tunnel view and you think some of the pieces are the most important ones, but others would probably say something quite different, and it's very helpful to find out, to get a feedback from outside and do that before you pitch to the most important potential investor of your life, yeah, and not after that, just to learn about what is really important in your story for others, not for yourself. Mm-hmm. That's really key.
I think I'll just follow up with on this with Dr. Behane, seeing that you are a state funder. I'm curious as to, besides the financial investment that you put into entrepreneurs, what other sort of support do you typically offer your investees?
So typically we'd basket these into non-financial support. And typically this is open doors. So, you know, holding the hand of the entrepreneur and introducing them to potential funders, potential technology development partners that they might not be able to get an audience from. We also, speak about recommendations to certain incubators, accelerators with whom we have relationships as a government funder. And so what we found is that, you know, many of our entrepreneurs may be very good as far as the technical aspects of their work is concerned, but the softer issues around business development understanding that, you know, there needs to be some sort of, I suppose, evolution of the leadership of this particular venture, those kinds of nuances need to be brought to the fore. And so we encourage, you know, these entrepreneurs to visit incubators and accelerators as well. As government, we are very big on entrepreneurship training, interventions, coaching and mentorship. And so for a number of our programs, there is always a coaching and mentorship component of it to, in essence, take the entrepreneur through the softer issues required to take their innovation forward. We certainly support as far as exhibitions and marketing is concerned. So in a number of these, we've supported entrepreneurs to go out, be part of some of these conferences, conventions, the BioUSA, the BioAfrica Convention, and be seen as far as what they're doing is concerned, to raise opportunities for funding or technical development partners or even commercial partners. But we will also say, you know, as investors, one thing we might need to do more often is to take up that board seat on the boards of these companies. Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, it is not expected that at a very early stage there's a fully fledged board, but it might even be in the capacity of an advisor to sit as an advisor to these entrepreneurs and to assist them as far as the business development and generally the work of the invention is concerned.
And on that note, I just want to put in the chat right now. I'm putting in the chat a poll to our audience who are currently 36. At some point, we had 40 people online. In addition to funding, what kind of support do you value most from investors? So I'm putting that in the chat. And please go on to the slido.com website and the code is there for you to answer that question so that our investors and funders can be aware of what supports you do value apart from the funding and in addition to what Dr. Pehene has highlighted that they the but I'm aware of time and I just want to move on to a question that came through from one of our entrepreneurs asking if exit strategies and conditions are usually part of the discussion with investors and how does it impact their decision to accept or to invest? So I'll pose that question to Marco and then maybe Natasha and Frank also can chip in as well.
Sure. From our side of things at OneBio, I think mentioning your the view in terms of exit and M&A, even if you're going for a pre-seed round, is valuable. Not necessarily from a quantum point of view straight off the bat, but more a kind of showcasing the founders' research around the space and competitors and companies in the past who have done similar work, perhaps in a different sphere. It's more a showcase of does that, what you're putting forward, your time scale to when you might look to exit, the kinds of acquirers you might be going after, does that stack up from a kind of a feasibility point of view? So even if just from that angle, I think it is useful to put in there. And caveat it as well. You know, if you're at an early stage and mentioning this, as Vui has mentioned earlier, there are a lot of regulatory hurdles, there are commercialization hurdles, there's so much in between you and that goal. But I think articulating a narrative in the M&A or exit point of view in general that stacks up against historical data just shows the depth of research that you've done. So we're a big fan of at least addressing it in a pitch.
Any thoughts, Frank?
From my side, would you like to see that in the pitch deck? I would not recommend to put it in the pitch deck, but would be interested to see your view on that.
Okay. Natasha, any differing thoughts?
From my perspective, yes, well, I agree. I think, you know, and you probably remember I mentioned before when we came to the optimal flow is that I do recommend adding something that shows that you've done your homework and you know the activities in the space. And that's oftentimes that is that M&A slide. And I encourage founders to think about it. And I couldn't agree more with Marco. You said about regulatory risk and commercialization risks. This does actually, in particular commercialization, is one of the biggest risks that investors take, whether it's specialist or private. So it is good. If that's what you intend to do, I think it is fair that you communicate that upfront, because it may not be for everybody. In biotech, it is fair to say that whether you're a specialist investor or private investor, everybody understands it is a long journey. So that in itself is not a problem. But it is good to understand where the founder or CEO may intend to take the company. So showing that you actually at least open to the idea of either strategic partnership or potential acquisition would definitely help you direct that discussion to and select the investor that you may actually want to engage at a later date. Because that's, if you say, well, we're going to do everything ourselves, well, that's fine, but just be prepared that this would not be for everybody, because there are just so many risks involved, especially that level of uncertainty when you're at the seed stage is just not something you can control. So I think I'm in favor of being fairly open, not putting any kind of valuations or anything on this, in your pitch deck, but I would advise to have that landscape overview and say that actually this space has demonstrated tremendous potential, or there have been a number of deals that were happening, and ensure that this is potentially where you may want to take the company.
Thank you so much.
I think, Adrian, from our side, I mean, it's for us, as investors in government, it's very important at least that the entrepreneur does disclose upfront, what they foresee will happen, whether they'll be acquired or whether they'll do it all by themselves. Certain of these investments that we make as government are strategic. Ultimately, we want to be very sure that, if government is going to put in, especially taxpayers' monies into these innovations, these entrepreneurs and their businesses, at least there is some competitiveness afforded to that particular country, or there's a particular, I suppose, problem that's being solved that's very, very important as far as the economy of government is concerned. And so those kinds of opportunities, we would not want to see those being acquired early on, because ultimately what it means is that, state-funded intellectual property ends up somewhere else, which might be to the detriment, of the country. But of course, in certain cases, it does make sense to say that, we'd like to be invested in, and the intention is to be acquired. That's 100%. I think it's very important from a government perspective. It might be different as far as private sector is concerned. Mm-hmm. What we've also found, and we've seen this actually, in this is a real case, where it was important for us to understand who is going to come in and be part of the cap table as far as investment is concerned. And so the last thing you want is, investees at least, and the entrepreneurs to very freely exchange shareholding. Because typically what happens is that we end up with an undesirable partner as a shareholder, which may have all sorts of detrimental consequences as far as the ability to raise follow-on funding is concerned. And so knowing these things upfront, being able to track these developments and be able to control them in certain cases, very, very important as far as what happens to the value of the investment in future. Thanks.
Thank you. I think with the little time that we have, give us an idea of the poll results. So the first question was what stage companies or our participants are. And the engagement was not great, but we do see that a majority is, there's a split between pre-seed and series. Wanted to know what people found most challenging when it comes to building relationships with investors, and the vote was for identifying the right investors. I hope that this discussion has helped a little bit in that in giving clarity there. Otherwise, I'll also just invite in the last words that our guest speakers are going to give to also speak to that. And then the last question was, in addition to funding, what kind of support do you most value from investors? And the responses are connections, advisory support, and expanding my network. And so to those two issues, I am going to just ask for like 30 seconds from each of our speakers. What do you think, how do you think entrepreneurs should work on identifying the right investor? And then finally, how do you help with expanding? I think the network, and Dr. Peyane did mention that, but I'd like to also get a view of our other speakers. So we can just start with Frank and then Marco, Natasha, in the order on my screen. So just 30 seconds before we round up.
So actually, a couple of years ago, we built a house for our family, and it was really a stressful experience. But after that, I thought, well, now I should build a house. Now I should start, because now I know everything about that. And that's actually something that's maybe also comparable for the funding round of companies, that the first day of thinking about your next funding round is the day that you closed your previous funding. Yeah. So it's something that you continuously should work on, and you should take the experience that you have made during the recent process to develop your story and to think about what you could do better, and who could maybe fit into your whole scheme, involve your investor in that, especially if it's a professional one like Gianmarco in the VC fund. So that's would be my wish for everyone to take along from this call.
Yes, and I'm aware we are just a minute over time. Just to say, I will be sharing, or I have the details, a presentation from Cohesion Bureau. So do reach out if you are interested, and I'm happy to share. Yes, Marco, your last words.
Last words, in terms of identifying investors, speak to as many people as you can, angels, VCs, government funding like TIA. At OneBio, we're always open to emails or phone calls. Just drop us a note. If we're not a fit, we'll try and put you in the right direction as well. A small ecosystem, no one's grabby. If we're not a fit, we'll try and make as many introductions as we can. And then in terms of additional value adds and support, a very quick plug, we will be deploying a lab offering in the next year or so called the One Bio Innovation Center, very generously funded by TIA. Vui, sorry for the shameless plug, but thanks where thanks is due. And we are hoping that that center can become a bit of a hub for things like this, networking events, getting people together to chat about funding. Would love to even host something like this in person, Adrian, at a place, at a bit of a hub. So keep everyone posted on that front.
Awesome. Thanks for that info. Yes, Natasha?
Yeah, I would say be part of the community. Being a founder is very, very challenging, and it can be a very lonely place. You know, so make sure that, you know, you're out there, you know, tap into your local innovation agencies. They can open so many doors, and that will help you pitch better, meet your peers, meet other companies, and identify potential investors. Oftentimes, potential investors actually come from very unexpected places, in that you've met at the local networking event. So I would say, be part of the community, and also, try and know what's happening in the industry, and try and connect to those that have done it. Because it's amazing how much knowledge can be, you can acquire by just talking to people that perhaps have been on a similar journey. And you can be open about some of your challenges, because you are going to have them. But being part of the community will help you tremendously in expanding your network and bringing potential advisors, potential customers, potential investors. So, get out there. And as I said before, talk to anyone who would listen. That's my number one advice, especially to when you're in the early stage.
Thank you, Natasha. Yes, Dr. Peyane?
I think from my side, I agree with everything that my colleagues have said. But one piece of advice for the entrepreneur: if you're an introvert, partner up with an extrovert. Because as Natasha has said and the colleagues have said, you need to be out there. People need to know about you. And there's no other way except to be out there with the community. Thanks.
Thank you so much to my expert panel. And thank you for all those who have hung on with us for a few extra minutes. Thank you. And I hope that this has been valuable discussion. I want to especially thank Natasha and Frank, who came through from Cohesion Bureau. As I said, I do have a presentation by Cohesion Bureau that I'll be sharing with my network. And if you are interested and we're not connected, please do DM me and I will be very happy to share that so you know what Cohesion Bureau does and how they can support you in enhancing the quality of your investor relationships and strategic communication. Keep the lessons learned today in mind as you navigate your entrepreneurial journey. And don't hesitate to reach out to the community when you do face those inevitable challenges. Thank you again for joining us and keep tuned because we will be sharing more about our upcoming session happening in a month's time. Thank you, everyone. Keep well and have a great day further. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.